Absalom's Death and the Return of David, Chapter 77. David, the king of Israel, watches his many hundreds of soldiers as they march past him. He looks much older, and his hair is turning gray from all his grief. It is a great army that leaves the gates of Mahanaim. All the soldiers are friends of David, and as they go by, they greet him with great respect. What Ahithophel feared has taken place. Absalom sent messengers throughout the entire land, calling the Israelites to battle. They had to assemble at Jerusalem. Thousands went to help Absalom, for they desired to have another king. But the older people shake their heads. They too hear what Absalom is doing, but they are not happy about all this. On the contrary, they think it is terrible. They think it is very impudent of Absalom. Impudent and wicked. How does he dare rebel like this? David still has many friends living throughout the entire land. They leave their homes and go to Mahanaim to help David. Of course, a great army comes together in Jerusalem, but in Mahanaim, thousands of soldiers gather together too. When Absalom is ready, he marches onward with his army. He makes Amasa, a son of David's sister, thus David's nephew, general. They go over Jordan and march in the direction of Mahanaim. David is informed of this. He divides his army into three groups, and over each group he places a commander. Thus David really has three generals. They are Joab, his brother Abishai, and the stranger Ittai. The enemy is close by. Do you say the enemy? Alas! David's heart shrinks within him when he thinks about this. The enemy is Absalom, his own child. David watches his army as they march past him. They nod to their king as though they would say to him, "Do not be afraid, we will be brave fighters." David would like to go with them, for he would like to protect Absalom. He probably could save Absalom from being slain. But his servants will not permit him to go. "No," they say, "you must remain in Mahanaim, because if you are slain in the battle, everything is lost. Beside, while you are in the city, your prayers can be a help to us." Yes, that is really so, and David remains in the city. Once again, he calls the three generals together and commands them, "Deal gently with the young men." He means that they must not kill Absalom, but they must spare his life. All the other officers of the army are told this too. These friends of David march forward toward the battlefield, but David remains in the city, waiting with anxious suspense the outcome of the battle. Who will be the winner? Through a great forest which is in the neighborhood of Mahanaim, a young man is riding upon a mule. He forces the animal onward, beating it, "Forward, forward, faster!" Anxiously, he looks around again and again. He is Absalom, the wicked prince who had the courage to rebel against his father. The battle has not been in his favor. His army is defeated, his soldiers are fleeing, and thousands are slain. They are slain by the embittered soldiers of David's army, or they are killed falling into pits. 20,000 already are dead. Absalom notices that he has lost the battle. The sound of rejoicing from David's soldiers is heard all around. No deliverance is possible for Absalom. The only thing which he can now do is flee as fast as he can. This is why we see him riding so fast. The terror tortures him, for he does not want to be slain. He cannot die. He is afraid of death. This is no wonder, for he has an accusing conscience. O Absalom, the wrath of the Lord pursues you, for the Lord is an avenger of sin. In wild terror he flees. Because of this fast speed, his long, beautiful hair becomes entangled in a low-hanging, thick branch of an oak tree under which he is riding. The mule in which he is sitting upon runs on. He slides off the animal, and there he hangs between heaven and earth. Ouch! Ouch! Every time he moves but slightly, he has unbearable pain. Now he cannot flee anymore. Now he is helpless. He is hopeful one of his friends will see him and help him. But no, not one of his friends sees him, but one of his enemies. This soldier quickly tells Joab. "Why didn't you smite him?" Joab asks roughly. "I would have given you a rich reward." "I may not do that," answers this man from the army of David. "Didn't the king say that Absalom must be spared?" Joab mumbles something and says, "I have no time to talk to you." He takes 3 arrows and goes to the place where Absalom is hanging. He thrusts the arrows into the heart of Absalom. Joab's armor bearers also come hastily and help slay him. With violent pain, this wicked prince dies. Joab could have set him free, but he had no desire to do so. Absalom, the rebel, must be killed. And really, children, Joab was right. Anyone who wants to murder his father may not remain alive. They take his body from the oak, cast it upon the ground, and throw a great heap of stones upon it. That is the end of this disobedient prince. The Lord said in his law, "Honor thy father and thy mother." Absalom did not do this, and it cost him his life. Do you honor and obey your parents? No. Someday the punishment will come upon you, for the Lord will not be mocked. Those who cause their father or their mother grief will be punished. Think about this seriously. But if you are obedient to your parents and do not give them any reasons for grief, the Lord will command his blessing upon it while you are upon the earth. A man is sitting at the gate of the city of Mahanaim. Occasionally he stares into the distance. Then he again looks before him. His hands shake. His lips quiver. It is David, who desires to know the outcome of the battle. A watchman is standing on top of the wall. Suddenly, this watchman sees a man running far in the distance. "Someone is coming," he calls to the king. "That will be a messenger," answers David. Shortly after this, the watchman calls again. "I see another man running." "That shall be the second messenger," the king thinks. His heart begins to beat faster. In a short time, The first messenger stands before him. He is Ahimeaz, the son of Zadok, the priest. King, we are victorious, he informs David, his face beaming with gladness. How did it go with Absalom? Immediately asks David. Ahimeaz surely knows, but he is afraid to say anything. He gives this evasive answer. I did see and hear a great tumult, but exactly what has happened I do not know, he said. Soon the second messenger arrives. The Lord has given you the complete victory, he begins. And Absalom, is it well with him? Is he still alive? David asks with trembling voice. He looks at this messenger with a searching look. All your enemies should be as that young man, was his answer. Oh, such a strange answer. What does that mean? But David understands immediately what the messenger means, which is that Absalom is dead. When David hears this, his eyes fill with tears. He gets up and goes into the chamber. Absalom, he mourns. Absalom, alas, had I but died, had I but died in your place, my son. Do you know why David is so bitterly grieved? David knows that Absalom is eternally lost. He knows that Absalom is in hell. He knows that Absalom can never be converted, for now it is forever too late. However, it is not too late for us to be saved, because we are still alive. The battle is over. Immediately after the death of Absalom, Joab called to his soldiers to stop fighting. They may not pursue the Israelites any longer because it is no longer necessary. Enough blood already has been shed. David's army returns triumphantly. The soldiers are glad and cheerful. They think that David will also be happy. But when they see the king is so sad, they are troubled and vexed. David does not even greet them. He hides himself in the house. He weeps and mourns over the death of Absalom. When Joab sees this, he becomes angry. He goes to the king and rebukes him with, "Don't you shame yourself. If we had lost the battle and if Absalom were still alive, it surely would have been good, would it not? Are you doing this because your friends have fought so bravely? You should go to the army and greet them." Joab has spoken the truth, but he has said it too roughly and cruelly. "Joab, don't you understand that David is grieved in his heart?" David also feels that he really is unthankful. He gets up and goes outdoors to his faithful friends who have fought so bravely. When the soldiers see David and hear him speak to them, they are satisfied. They notice that the king is thankful toward them. It is a few weeks later. It is very busy in Mahanaim. Large troops of soldiers march through the gates and leave the city. What? Must they go and fight again? Oh no, not this time, but David shall return to Jerusalem. Now that Absalom is dead, the people regret that they have called that wicked prince to be their king. They say to each other, "It was not right of us to have driven David away. We should really go and ask him to return." They send a messenger to Mahanaim saying, "David, will you come back to us?" Yes, the king will gladly return to Jerusalem. Therefore he leaves Mahanaim and travels toward Jordan. What a difference from a short time ago. Then he had to flee, but now he returns as a victorious king. When they come to the shore of Jordan, a ferry boat is on its way to carry the king to the other side. Look at that one man who is doing his very best. He continually casts his glance toward the king. He thinks, "Shall the king see me? Will the king notice that I am working so hard?" Who is this man? Take a good look. Ah, we know him. He is Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, who has deceived his master so shamefully. He is so obliging that it is most astonishing. He calls the loudest. He wants to be the main person. He would like to do everything alone. But why? Because he is afraid that his deceit will be discovered, and therefore he would like to win David's favor. Oh, if the king would only look at him now! Another man is also on the ferry boat. He is not so busy. He stands gazing into space, trembling with fear. The ferry boat comes to a stop at the shore, where the king is waiting. With trembling steps, he walks off the boat, goes to David, and bows low before him. He is Shimei, the coward, who cursed the king, who threw stones at him and cast dust at him when the king fled. "Go ahead, Shimei, curse now, mock now, throw stones and cast dust now if you dare." No, he dare not do that now. He is too cowardly. Tremblingly, he falls before the king. "O king, forgive me, forgive me," he moans. "I never will do it again. I have sinned. But now I am the first to come back to meet you and to bring you back. I want to regain your favor." The courageous Abishai is filled with disgust about this whole affair. "Shall not Shimei be put to death?" he asked angrily. "He has cursed the king who has been anointed by the Lord." "No," said David. "Abishai, you must not speak so. Shimei shall not be put to death." The king even swears to Shimei and promises him with an oath that he would not die. "Wrong, David. Abishai is right. Shimei should have been slain because God has commanded in his law that anyone who curses the king must be killed. Shimei really is guilty of death." Abishai is silent, although he is not satisfied. Shimei gets up. He heaves a sigh of relief. He was so afraid. Aha! All has turned to his benefit. When the king finally arrived on the other side Jordan and is on his way to Jerusalem, a man is seen coming in the distance. What a pitiable person! He is a cripple. He is Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan. All those weeks, while David was away, he did not wash his clothes nor trim his beard. This is a sign of mourning. Over and over again, he prayed every day, and the Lord has heard those prayers. He hears that the king is returning, and he can no longer wait. With his feeble body, he goes to meet the king and to greet him with a hearty welcome. His face beams with gladness. But David looks cross at him. "Mephibosheth, "Why didn't you go along with me when I was compelled to leave Jerusalem?" he asked angrily. "Ziba, that deceiver makes sure that he gets out of sight in a hurry." Mephibosheth looks honestly at the king and answers, "I really could not come along so quickly, seeing I am a cripple. Beside this, my servant deceived me. It is not true what he told you about me." "Be silent. I do not want to hear another word about it. You and Ziba must divide the land," says King David impatiently. "That is wrong again, David. Why don't you call Ziba to give an account of his actions? You should investigate, King. That is your duty." "What a pity. David investigates nothing, and he does not treat Mephibosheth honestly. Mephibosheth did not deserve this." Still, Mephibosheth does not get angry with David. He answers calmly, "Ziba can keep everything. I am so very happy that you are returning safely. That is worth more to me than all my lands. That is worth more to me than all my riches." But the return of David, which began so well, ends sadly. There is trouble between the men of Judah and the men of the other tribes of Israel. When the men of Israel could not get their way, after speaking evil and angry words, one of them, a certain Sheba, became so angry that he said, "I will no longer recognize David as king. I will have nothing to do with him. We will go and help ourselves." He walks away furiously, and the men of Israel follow him. Thus, again, revolt breaks out. Yes, but is that allowed? No, surely not. Therefore, David seeks to punish this rebel. He calls his general, Amasa. "What? Amasa? Isn't Joab the general?" "He was, but no longer is. David is angry with Joab because he killed Absalom. He is also angry with Joab because he is so impudent. While the king was still in Mahanaim, he sent a message to Amasa and promised him, 'Amasa, from now on you may be my general.' That is ignorant of you, David. And beside, you cannot make Amasa general just like that. Really, Amasa made himself worthy of death because he chose to help Absalom. Amasa was a rebel, just as well as Absalom." Still, David turned Joab aside and appointed Amasa. For that reason, Amasa is the new general. David gave him orders to gather the army together and overcome Sheba. But Amasa is not a good general. He cannot manage it. He will try, but he is not successful. On the way, he meets his cousin, Joab. Joab acts very friendly. He will kiss Amasa. We would say he will shake hands with him. But Joab does not mean it. Unexpectedly, he kills Amasa. "That is false of you, Joab. That is the second murder you are guilty of. Abner was the first. Amasa is the second, who has been killed by Joab." Joab makes an effort to gather the army together, and he is successful. Joab pursues Sheba, and the outcome is that Sheba is slain. Joab returns as the victor. Sheba can no longer harm David, for he is dead, and the revolt is crushed. Meanwhile, David arrives in Jerusalem. The Lord has laid heavy punishments upon David. The sword shall not depart from your house, Nathan once said, and this is being fulfilled. But David never would be cast away, because the Lord had promised him that his kingdom shall be unbreakable, and that word, too, shall be fulfilled. God's faithfulness shall stand to all eternity.